Welcome to the Matthew Moran Podcast. Here you will find a series of in-depth conversations with the world's best nature photographers, filmmakers, conservationists, editors, writers, and publishers. You will get an insight into the lives of industry experts and the unsung heroes, their stories, what goes on in their minds, how they approach their work, and how they make it pay. The podcast also looks at the role that photography and filmmaking plays in helping to raise awareness about the global plight of species. And despite the depressing statistics, we look for solutions of what we can all do to contribute to conservation. It's too easy to be cynical these days, and cynicism doesn't get you anywhere. All my guests give up their time for free and are incredibly generous of spirit. So this is my chance to share these conversations with you. A quick note to say thanks to all the Patreon supporters who have contributed to help keep this podcast going. The response has been truly heartwarming. If you would like to help, you can do so by contributing $5 per month at patreon.com/the Matthew Moran podcast. And if you can't, you can listen for free, but share it, get it out there. There are so many podcasts out there. How do you make an impact? Well, you can really help. Share this with your community, your loved ones, your friends, family. Every little bit helps. Thanks so much. This week, my guest is Alexa Keith. Alexa is the senior editor for wildlife at National Geographic, and she kindly gave up an hour of a busy weekend judging the European Wildlife Photographer of the Year competition in Potsdam in Germany. We were actually two of the five judges that weekend, so I couldn't miss the opportunity to grab a face-to-face interview, as there was so much I wanted to ask her about. We packed a lot in, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy this. Here she is. Alexa, thank you so much for coming, taking the time in the middle of jet lag and in the middle of judging together.
That's
European
right.
Wildlife Photographer of the Year. So I really appreciate you. We're in my hotel room doing this, and I'm a bit of an opportunist and a bit cheeky, you know, we should be doing a job, but I couldn't miss the opportunity to grab you and talk about all things photography and editing and your work at the magazine. So we'll just jump right in. And it's great. I've just mentioned to you before, I always love interviewing editors. It's really good to get the other side. You know, we interview mostly photographers on this podcast, but obviously photographers need really good editors. And that's been your job for quite a while now, right?
That's true. And thank you so much for this opportunity, Matt. I'm really honored to be on your podcast.
Great.
I'm happy to be doing this.
Awesome.
It's been a great couple of days Germany so far.
Yeah, it has. This is certainly my first big judging experience. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And it sparks lots of great conversations between all the judges as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely.
Which has been really good. And also getting a sort of bigger picture on the type of images that are being entered into these competitions and looking at trends, you know, looking at how trends are changing. Big eye-opening experience. So yeah, we're actually halfway through this, so we can't reveal anything
right
just yet. But I was curious in doing, you know, just some quick research on you before mm-hmm. on the way over here. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey? Because I read you did a French literature degree, and how you went from that to becoming a magazine editor for National Geographic.
Yeah, it's a bit of a windy road, I would say. But it all kind of makes sense in the end, which is the interesting part. Yes, I was a French literature major. I went into college thinking I wanted to be a marine biologist, and then discovered that I actually preferred the stories of the sea as opposed to the chemistry of the sea. But I think with French literature, it was both the language, which I love speaking different languages. I wish I knew more. That and the storytelling. I've always loved pictures and words ever since I was little, and mainly creative writing to start. So literature kind of brought all that together. And then for a while, I wanted to be a translator. A literary translator to kind of be able to convey the essence of of the artistry, I guess, across languages. So in a way, I view my role as a picture editor in a kind of similar way. I feel like I'm kind of a synthesizer of the photographer's vision of the visual narrative, and I help shape that and bring it to a broader audience.
Yeah, I love that. And I loved also reading that you don't often hear it, but, you know, as a kid, like, you loved drawing and you loved storytelling. And like, what kid doesn't? Like,
right.
we both have daughters.
Yep.
And funnily enough, like, so many, I always just find it fascinating that almost every story book that you have, it involves animals, right?
That's right.
As a kid. And then you grow up and you're like editing stories about animals for National Geographic. And you're doing it in an adult way. But I guess the magic and the mystique of it is still there from when you're reading these like lovely books to children and also enjoying them yourself when you're a kid.
Very much. Very much so.
Yeah, that's lovely. Your early experiences of working in storytelling were they in newsrooms, is that right? Did you work for a news channel?
So I first I started out in media, in the media industry, in libraries, actually. So my first media job was at CNN. I was a video librarian on the DC bureau, and that involved logging hundreds and hundreds of hours of tape, which was fascinating. I was on the international beat, so I got to log all of the, and it was during the time of the Kosovo War, and a lot going on in Eastern Europe particularly. And I also kind of got to know all the names of the leaders, you know, the different heads of state and the different, you know, different types of aircraft. I mean, there were a lot of things to learn about, in addition to just seeing, you know, this incredible raw footage of what was going on.
And that would have been fascinating, obviously, a pre-internet era, a pre-social media era, of course.
Yeah.
And that was how you were getting news from literally from the front line, by watching this video.
Yeah. And that was probably, I think if I got my dates right, that was like 1998 or something like that. So from there, I went to AOL. So my boss at CNN went to AOL. She brought me along with her, essentially. And I started kind of trying to manage, to organize the internet. That was our job. We were
Days of the internet.
Yeah. We were a group of us, taxonomists, I guess you'd call us, we each were assigned a specific category for this Open Directory project, which was basically the framework for search engines. So we would manually curate content to be put in these different categories. So again, my focus was news, international events, things like that. And then from there, I got a lucky break, and I went to US News and World Report as their photo librarian. So that was kind of my first job with photography. But the through line there was media, journalism, and now photography. So I started at US News in 2001, February of 2001. We had a full photo library with film and slides and a photo department of at least 20 plus people. And we would manually, you know, cut the negatives, put them in cards, file them. We had a digital asset management system. So digital, but it was right at that time when the shift was happening between film and digital photography.
Yeah.
So it was really an interesting time. And then, of course, after September 11th, and then the massive changes in the media industry, photography particularly, I was there for about 10 years and just saw a lot of shifting.
Did the shifting come as a consequence of the switch to digital? Like, was it that, did you start then to see just much more content coming in because it was, you know, more widely available to, you know, not just journalists, but, you know, I always kind of cite the digital revolution that sort of democratized photography, but mm-hmm. that was kind of a bit later, maybe 2005, 2006.
I didn't see so much of that in terms of the work that I was dealing with. I think it was just more kind of how newsrooms were structured, maybe. I mean, it was, Yeah, I don't know that it was an, I didn't see like an exact, like, it was more, I think more when I started at National Geographic, when I was working a lot with photography that was being sent in by our Yorkshire community, yeah. which we had at that time. So when I went to National Geographic, that was in 2011, I started out there as the photography producer, which meant that I was working on the website, I was curating photo of the day. That was a big part of my job. And a lot of those pictures were coming from, I mean, a lot of them came from the magazine assignments, the photography that was made for those. But then another part came from our user-generated community, which at the time was called Your Shot. And it was very interesting to see. I mean, it was amazing to see just the volume of photography coming from all over the world and how easily that was then transmitted and shared. It also made me appreciate the difference between being a professional photographer and being a photojournalist, particularly, and being someone who loves taking pictures. I think the difference for me really is, you've heard everyone says this, it's a cliche that everyone has at least one good photograph in them. I think that more than that, but being able to consistently go out and come back with strong images that hang together, that that really convey the story, that nail the assignment. I mean, that takes skill and experience.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
Yeah.
And you mentioned moving to National Geographic. Or just in a quick timeline here. Yeah. This was so after AOL. Like, did you then go work straight into working for National Geographic after that?
After AOL was US News and World Report. Yeah. Yeah. And then that was 10 years and then National Geographic.
Yeah. And when you went to National Geographic, cause I'm seeing, post or before university wanting to be a marine biologist, yes. and then ending up in National Geographic. Were your first roles there or first jobs there working with natural history images?
Not so much, not as in so far as a lot of the stories that were generating photography were about natural history, but I was more just generally working with any of the photography that we were working on. It was when I think it was in 2020, around then, maybe a little before, we started kind of separating out into content areas. And so my focus became animals, wildlife, natural history, conservation.
Was that did you push for that job? Or like, was it there for you?
It just kind of happened, I think. I don't remember the seminal moment when there were a few stories early on that I worked on.
Yeah.
That I think actually the first magazine story I worked on was with Amy Vitale and her elephant sanctuary elephant sanctuary project in Rtetí with orphan elephants, and that was kind of my first natural history story really. And I think from there, it just kind of went on.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And I what I love about hearing those kind of stories, and it sounds like through all your work as an archivist or working logging videotape, like you're not on your own doing this. It's always a team game.
Yes.
And I always like to remind photographers, because we do spend a lot of time on our own, especially natural history photographers, that when it comes to wanting to get work published or make a book or do an online gallery or work with a designer, it becomes a team game.
Yes.
And I read also that, that's a big part of what you love about doing this work is the collaboration and collaborative approach.
Definitely. I particularly like, I really love working with photographers. I like coming up with ideas. I like talking about that together. I like figuring out how to make that happen. I like the field production part of it, really. I mean, even though I don't physically go into the field, I'm kind of there riding alongside virtually, which I really enjoy. And then when the photography is completed and the edit, we've worked on the edit together, and then it's really fun to work with a designer and to kind of go through that whole process of kind of putting the images together in a way that, up until, you know, really the focus for long form feature storytelling at National Geographic for a very long time has been the print magazine. So that's, you know, how's it going to look on the pages and how is it, you know, where does the gutter fall and all of that, which completely can transform,
of course,
you know, a tray of images, which is, you know, again, back to the point where it's really pretty tough to go out and create, you know,
yeah,
enough diversity, enough variety to really pull off a story.
I yeah, mean, and it's exactly what we were just talking about, having judged the, you know, the photo journal, well, the portfolio categories,
mm-hmm,
like to get those. And it seems so funny that, you know, you can go out for months and shoot a story and you can still struggle to find, I don't know what the average is, but like between 10 and 20 images that are going to really impact and tell that story in a clear and concise way.
Yeah.
And especially with the judging right now, just working out, you know, which one really works and mm-hmm, having those discussions, that must be fun as mm-hmm well, but also kind of really hard, especially when, you know, and you're working with photographers who are so passionate about it and who put yeah so much work and effort into getting certain images. And they may be great standalone images, but they just don't perhaps work for the story and the layout. But
right,
you, that's, I guess, the tough part mm-hmm of your job is you have to be a bit ruthless.
You do. Yes, you do. That's hard. That can be very hard.
Yeah. So we don't have a great deal of time, so we're going to just punch like right through. I got some questions. And yeah, you talk. Yeah. Could you talk a bit about, because again, you mentioned this, but just some of the stories, you know, that I've had, like, I don't know, that you've found that have the biggest impact on you, and those, you know, particularly the ones that talk about and that look at our relationship with the natural world.
Yes, I always have a very hard time selecting whenever anyone asks me what my favorite song or movie is. I kind of draw a complete blank. So
yeah,
just give me a minute to,
yeah, no, that's,
to think about
that's
it.
That's fine. I mean, it's kind of, it's a more of a broad question. I mean, maybe like as a, making it a bit more simple, like what are the most difficult or challenging stories that you've worked on?
Well, I can say, I mean, one story that comes to mind is a story we did on cheetah trafficking with Nicole Sebecki and Rachel Bale. And that was kind of the first large story I'd worked on that had to do with wildlife crime. And in a place that was tricky to navigate and a story that had the potential to really make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
In helping save the last remaining cheetah. So that's one that really is a standout for me.
Yeah.
And we had a fantastic team. We had worked together very well, and that was incredibly rewarding. Another story that comes to mind is the first, one of the first ones I worked on, which was on urban wildlife with Corey Arnold. That was during the pandemic, so we were navigating
quarantines
goodness and shutdowns and all sorts
when
of things.
When I asked about what's the most challenging story, you've just got that logistical issue.
Yeah, that
as
was
well.
that was, but it all, you know, it all came together. It's kind of amazing when you're thinking ahead for basically 18 months. I mean, that's kind of the average time frame, I would say.
Yeah.
From start to publication. There's so many things that happen in between, and it can be challenging to figure out like where to be very, where to make your decisions. You're kind of like building this framework, but then leaving room for discovery and for things to, you know, change like as they do.
And
yeah,
you have to be kind of open to that, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, and of course there's deadlines and you need to have regular meetings, but you know,
yeah,
that's the thing about natural history photography is, you know, there's so many unknowns. So being, I guess, I don't know, I'm just imagining that you would have a plan and the type of images you want with, you know, with an opener and a closer, but
yeah,
being open to those changes also might affect how the story goes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a constant conversation.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, you know, so much of it is about the process.
Sure.
But then, you know, at the end of it, there is the goal of, you know, publishing a story, you
yeah
know, so it's a really interesting, it's dynamic.
Yeah, that's great. And you asked me, you answered my next question, which was going to be what was, the most rewarding story. And I guess all of them are to a certain degree, but I often ask people, it's very hard to quantify, we all have like a responsibility of, putting stuff out there, like photographers, editors, designers, mm-hmm. It's a team game, but having, because of course the reach that National Geographic is so big, that it can have some influence. So, when you talk about, for example, with that cheetah story, it's not like you can go around and start slapping yourself on the back saying we saved cheetahs, but you did your bit.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so. And every story is different. Every story, that's another thing that that I love about the job, is that it's never dull. Every story has its own dynamic, its own set of circumstances.
Yeah.
Its own, yeah.
And is the way that you work with a story very different from story to story? Because, of course, there are different photographers. They're in different countries with perhaps, some countries having more issues than others with permission and access. But do you yourself try and keep on a even plane when you're working on these stories and you've got to work to a deadline? Like, how do you maintain structure within a field that often can't follow a structure, if that makes sense?
Communication is key.
Yeah.
We do have certain like benchmark deadlines to meet. Ideally there are times to regroup throughout the process and to take a look at what we've got so far and what we need moving forward. It involves being available all the time when I'm working with someone who's in the field, just checking in regularly, answering messages, being there to...
And are those photographers sending you content as they go?
Sometimes. Yeah. I think I leave it up to the photographer to kind of rely on my feedback as much as is helpful, because I also don't want to be making them feel micromanaged.
Sure.
Because I've... we're working together for a reason. We're working together because I know they'll be good for the story, and I trust their skill and judgment and expertise. So, it just depends. But sometimes it can be really helpful to have those check-ins, but especially if you're, photographer alone in the field, and that can also be sometimes be very lonely work, and then have some, feedback and some real time.
Yeah. And I'm going to talk to you about this because it's a sort of difficult question to answer, but everyone's going to want me to ask it.
Okay.
Who's been on the podcast?
Sure.
Or also, who listens to the podcast.
Yeah.
How do you become a National Geographic published photographer? Actually, I talked to Charlie Hamilton James about this.
Oh, great.
Yeah, he just said a really good thing that, a lot of the people who are regularly published are kind of obsessed. And that laser guided focus just like is on another level. And I guess, in a way that does make sense. That's not saying that everybody who gets published has to work in that way. But he also said another really good thing about, what looks like great success on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
He says it doesn't necessarily make you happy. It just makes you very busy.
Right.
And I thought that was a good answer to it. And I know, again, it's not straightforward, but like it would be really... Like if I wouldn't want to miss the opportunity of asking you some key elements of, pitching or like creating a good story, pieces of advice, what kind of things are you looking for? Because even though it's really tough, you still need stories, right? And you still need content.
Yeah. Charlie's right. there is an enormous amount of time and energy that goes into pulling these stories off. And on the part of the photographer to be like really dedicated to that. That's key. I think it's a pretty high bar for entry because often we're asking a lot of people that we're assigning to do something, especially a feature story. That's multiple weeks in the field. It's being able to kind of navigate the situation. I mean, it's a lot of times people come to us with ideas and stories, and we're working together in places that they're already familiar with and already have access to and some kind of ability to get things done there without my help. But it's really a lot to ask. And it's, we're also, you know, at the end of it, we ask for every single image and everything to be, you know, named the certain way and everything to be delivered. So it's we're not a quick turn kind of operation. So it's so I guess to answer your question, one of the things I look for is someone who has a proven track record in some way, either with the story that they've pitched to us, perhaps that we're then developing further, or something similar, or I look for a consistent way of seeing. I look for a way of seeing that is unique to that photographer. That's another thing I look for, consistency. What are they bringing to it that's unique? What are they bringing to it that no one else can? I also look for opportunities to give people a chance to do something. So another part of it is like finding stories of different sizes, ideally, that will allow someone to get a little bit of that experience and then be able to build to something bigger, because I think it's incredibly important that we are able to engage with photographers at all levels, because you can't just wake up one morning and be a National Geographic photographer. It takes time and support. And it's particularly tough in our industry right now, because a lot of times we're asking people to come to us with projects they've already worked on, which means having them finding funding,
of course,
yeah. Whether through grants or partnerships. You know, I'm aware of all that. But I would say it's very, and I would also say, don't get discouraged. You know, it's sometimes an idea, you have an idea, and really what you're doing is you're making drafts, you know, it's iterative, you know, you're sketching it out. Yeah. And you know, sometimes that just takes a while. And,
of course. And rejection is a very important thing to feel, as hard as it is for a creative person. It tells you like, okay, well, how could I improve this? Or maybe it tells you that's enough. Like I'm done with that. It just depends on the person. But I've often thought as heartbreaking as it is to get a rejection email or anything, it kind of makes you thicker skinned, and also perhaps makes you believe a little bit more in what you want to do and you know, make a decision about which path you're going to go on to next.
It's incredibly important. I think it's, because it is a living, breathing thing, you know. And sometimes I'll be in touch with a photographer over a period of, you know, months, maybe even longer than that, you know, and to just continue to have a dialogue and check in and kind of see how things are going and, you know, be able to offer constructive feedback in a way that's kind of building towards that goal, you know?
Yeah. And that's really valuable as well. I guess that's also the point of the relationship, because if as a photographer, if you're not getting that kind of regular feedback, then you're not really forced to think about, you know, where you're going with the story or what direction. And I mean, personally, I speak about that from, you know, now working with Morgan on the cemetery story. Mm-hmm. And it just like, now we have these regular check-ins like every couple of months, and it's just, wow, it's so great.
Yeah.
And also what it does is it forces me to think, oh, actually I'm going to be seeing her in a few weeks. I should probably get down to the cemetery.
Right.
Nothing like mini deadlines within a bigger deadline.
Yeah. It's accountability, you know, to yourself and to, you know, the project and,
totally. Change of subject.
Sure.
But equally important, you know, thinking about, and you know, I really appreciate you answering that, because it is very tricky, and I'm sure you're inundated with photographers, you know, pitching stories and ideas, and so you have to send hundreds of rejections a week. I don't know how it works, but yeah, it's tough, right?
It is. I will add one thing that's really important, and I know it's hard, but having some context for who the photographer is very important. Whether I've met them at a portfolio review, whether they are affiliated with an organization or a group that I am aware of, whether it's, it's really hard to get to get pitches completely cold.
Yeah.
And that's tough because I know a lot of times people can't travel to the places where editors gather, which I, you know, I'm a big believer in being able to go to festivals all over the world.
Yeah.
Whenever I get a chance to do that, you know, I think that's really important. Just looking for opportunities to kind of build your network so that you, when you do present yourself and introduce yourself to editors, there's that added context.
Yeah.
And also to be sure that you do your research about who you're pitching to and what's been done already and kind of why this at this time makes sense for, you know, in my case, National Geographic. So
that's awesome advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate that. So jumping forward, you know, in this already precarious industry, I'd be curious about, you know, the conversations that are going on, you know, around what does the future hold for photography and at National Geographic. And also, it's kind of a two-pronged question, you know, but the conversations going on around AI.
AI.
You know, I mean, as we talked about through, you know, there was someone on my a recent workshop of mine who works in neuroscience, and she was kind of saying, oh, you know, the bubble's burst a little bit. I mean, obviously AI is here and it's only going to grow and get better, but that from a year ago, that initial like, wow, it's going to take over the world, and mm-hmm. you know, we already struggle with trusting photography. Mm-hmm. And you know, now with AI, like, could you talk about that a little bit, what your experience has been of it and at the magazine?
Well, I have to say it hasn't really, I mean, we've talked about it, of course, and I think we've done maybe a couple of stories kind of digital on our digital platform, kind of showing like, this is an AI generated photograph. This is, you know, a photograph taken by a human using a camera. But aside from, I think we're in the process of kind of figuring out how to talk about that.
Yeah.
I know, you know, that it is pretty, you know, with any new technology, there needs to be a way to embrace it while also contextualizing it.
Yeah. It's like, it's not all bad, right?
Right. I think in the right way, I think with AI, what's the big unknown is it's just happening so quickly that it's kind of difficult to know where to jump in, I guess.
Yeah.
But I haven't had, in terms of like dealing with AI generated photography, I really haven't, that hasn't come up for me.
I guess that perhaps could come from the sort of how you talk about it, the way things operate with you in the magazine, it's long form relationships. And funnily enough, I talked with Marcus about this because I interviewed him last year, Marcus Westberg, and we talked a little bit about AI, and he said a good thing I hadn't really thought about is actually, you know, people want to work with photographers, not just because of their photographs, but because of who they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's really, I think it's so important. There are so many important stories to be told. There are so many things that we need to be paying attention to, I think. And the challenge now with so much information happening and the way that we get our information, which is so often on our phones, very much personalized, directed to us. How do you, as an editor or as an organizer, or, you know, I can speak for myself, as an editor, when I think about framing stories, it's a challenge because you need to find a way to take something that everyone thinks they already know all about and find a new way to frame it.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely has to do with the human people, It's not just, you know, finding an image that illustrates something. It's making photography and engaging with photography that actually is bringing something to the story.
And bringing something emotional,
right?
Which I think, you know, in my limited knowledge and understanding, it's something that, you know, AI can't do. And again, the same neuroscientist was in my workshop. She said, you know, you could type into ChatGPT, write a chapter of a book in the style of Harry Potter, and it would do a really great job of it, but there would be no story there.
Right.
Because stories come from the heart. And again, it's one of the things I'm working on, you know, so ever since I did the Missouri Photo Workshop and working on with Morgan is like, you know, capturing emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the hardest things.
Yep. And that's where, that's the time, that's the commitment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's luck, but it's also time, and it's, you know, it's all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So we'll to be continued.
Right.
If I get you back on in like a year, you'd be out of a job. You know, be like, edit me a story in the style of Alexa Key from National Geographic.
Oh, Lord.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And what about you personally? Do you have any like personal ambitions? You know, are there still kind of, I mean, it's a, again, always from the outside, these things look great. It's like, oh, wow, you know. Kathy Moran was at National Geographic 40 years and, you know, has this, you know, great status and obviously was brilliant and worked with so many great photographers. And, you know, do you have any, you know, hopes, wishes and dreams for the future?
I want to be that good. I want to.
Because you worked together, didn't you?
We did. Kathy, I was fortunate to have Kathy as my mentor. She's really the one who brought me into this space. Yeah, I think about Kathy almost every day. I try to think about good stories. I mean, it's about good stories. It's about doing what's best for the story. It's about, you know, and I that's kind of, you know, there's so many things I've learned from her that that continue to kind of be my guiding principles. So I guess that would be my goal, is to be the most, you know, to always remember that what I'm putting out there actually has the potential to make a difference. It does make a difference on many different levels. Just to always keep that in mind, you know, it's not about any one person, to kind of come back to the beginning of the conversation. It's about the story.
Yeah.
So I find that clarifying a lot of times, because it's, you can get caught up in lots of different areas of that story. If you look at it like a, you know, body of water with branches and tributaries and eddies and whatever else, you know, I tend to like water metaphors, but.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
I mean, I often think sometimes, especially when you've been working on something for so long, like for example, you know, I did with our Fox book, and I worked closely with the designer, and quite close to the end of that project, I actually turned to him and said, like, is this any good? Like, and I just had this moment of like, you're so close to it that it's just hard to kind of pull back sometimes.
It is, yeah.
And of course, you know, 2 years on from that, I'm really proud of it, and that's totally fine. But yeah, I guess that's important, again, why, you know, you're part of a team, and it's not just only, you know, you're the editor, but it's not just your responsibility. Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to do good work. That sounds really cliche, but it's true.
Well, I mean, so far it's going really well. And, you know, when you, I guess, took over not long before the pandemic, right? So it was a baptism of fire.
It was a bit. Yeah, we went home about the day that I was promoted to the role of kind of being the visual lead for the animals desk at the time. That was literally like the week before we all went home.
Oh, God.
So it was, but luckily Kathy was there and to help provide guidance and feedback and invaluable advice and mentorship. I can't say enough how thankful I am for Kathy.
That's great. But now, as well as, you know, as good as that, you know, experience was, it's like, you know, that idea of the new broom sweeping clean, and, you know, it's taking on your own path and your own vision.
I would love to find ways to do more mentorship, to do more. I really enjoy portfolio reviews. I like talking with people. I like that aspect a lot. It's tricky when you're working, when you have a lot of stories on your plate and a lot of things you're getting done that have to do with producing stories, to have the time for that, to really have the time for meaningful back and forth, because a lot of times there are just not that many hours in the day.
Yeah, sure. And there I was yesterday asking you about vacations.
Oh, yes, we do get them. It's true. We do get them. But it's just so, being able to open the, provide entry points for people, especially with wildlife photography, which is very specialized and in a lot of cases takes a lot of equipment and time and access. Yeah. And I would love to see more people engaging with that, more photographers engaging with that, and finding, from my standpoint, different ways to do that,
Yeah.
I
think that's a really important message, because I think, we've had some of these conversations over the last few days about, what does the future hold for wildlife photography kind of in general, and, the trends that have changed so much. We were talking about obviously the social media generation, how, some young people are not necessarily interested in being published in National Geographic or winning competitions. It's all about their YouTube channel. And and it's not to knock that. It's just like, this is like you mentioned earlier, it's technology changing the shape and course of things. And I guess organizations like National Geographic also have to react to that as well.
Yeah. I think it's really something that's come up that I think is important to remember, is that even though right now everyone wants to see video, everyone wants to see moving images, which definitely have their place, still photography also has its place. They're two very different formats. And I think it's very important to remember that, and even just sitting through the judging that we're doing with still photography, I mean, you spend time with pictures. Pictures work, even though it's a still image, there are many different layers and many things going on. And as an editor, I can say that that's also an iterative process, and that you get a selection of images, you look through them, again and again and again. And each time, I mean, pretty much very often I notice new things that I didn't see the first time around.
Yeah.
So, I think it's really important to keep that in mind, that still photography, that is something you can spend time with, that you can, it makes you feel something. It hopefully makes, piques curiosity, it informative, and it's all happening in that one space. And that's very valuable.
So there's still life yet in still photography.
Absolutely.
Well, Alexa, that's like the perfect place to end this.
Okay.
And thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt.
Like, totally impromptu. I really appreciate the
no
time
problem.
Again.
My pleasure.
And I'm sure the audience is going to love to hear what you've had to say.
I hope so.
Yeah, we will hopefully we'll have a bit more time, next time in a year or two. And it'll be really interesting to, talk about the changes in that time. But thanks so much. We've got to go and sit in a dark room for another few hours. Poor us. But it's been really great, and I really appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you, Matt.
Alexa is so warm and lovely. Big thanks to her again for taking the time during our busy weekend judging, and for her managing jet lag. And she really did deliver. I hope you enjoyed that as much as me. Thanks again for all the kind comments, the Patreon supporters, the Insta followers enjoying my new reels about photographing life in the cemetery. I'm having fun putting those together. So until next time, stay cool if you're hot. And for my Southern Hemisphere listeners, wrap up warm. And I'll see you soon.